The Greater Philadelphia Senior Executives Group Entrepreneur Circle Podcast, audio episode number one for Friday, January 6th, 2012. Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Greater Philadelphia Senior Executives Group's Entrepreneur Circle Podcast. I'm your podcast host, Steve Lubetkin. In this program, a presentation and conversation with Dean Miller, Managing Director of Novitas Capital and President and CEO of the Greater Philadelphia Alliance for Capital and Technologies. First, a few words about the Greater Philadelphia Senior Executives Group. GPSEG, as it's known to its members, is a nonprofit professional association composed of senior-level executives committed to exchanging business contacts and ideas in a spirit of generous giving and to fostering career fulfillment, business development, and professional and personal growth. For more information on membership in GPSEG, visit the website gpseg.org. These podcasts are interested in seeking sponsorship support. If you are interested in sponsoring this episode or future episodes of this podcast, please contact me at steve@lubetkincommunications.com. We'll be back to introduce our speaker after this message.
Hey there, this is Peter Shankman, the entrepreneur and founder of Help a Reporter Out. Listen, I used to be a former fat kid. I know what it's like to have to get in shape and how to take care of yourself. And the best way to do it, take care of yourself and support a great cause at the same time. I do that a lot. I run marathons for charity. I skydive to raise money to save animals. I do a lot of that all the time, and I know some of the best ways to do it. So what I want to talk to you about today is a group called Community Options. Community Options is a national nonprofit. They've been developing homes, social enterprises, and employment for people with disabilities since 1989. And to raise money so they can keep doing the great work they do, Community Options holds the national Cupid's Chase 5K run. I am proud to say that I am the honorary New York chair for 2012. The Cupid's Chase 5K run takes place in 25 cities across 10 states on the same day and same time, Saturday, February 11th, 2012, and is the largest simultaneous charity 5K in the U.S. From New York City to Albuquerque, New Mexico, there is a Cupid's Chase 5K that you can participate in to support the mission of Community Options. Let's do something to support people with disabilities and have fun this Valentine's weekend. I hope we can see you there, and I hope you'll support us and participate in the Cupid's Chase 5K run this February 11th. To find details and register, just Google Cupid's Chase or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/Cupid's Chase, all one word. Join me, Peter Shankman, in supporting Community Options, a wonderful organization supporting people with disabilities. Have a great run and a great day.
And since this is our inaugural podcast in the GPSEG Entrepreneur Circle series, we thought it might be worthwhile to spend a few moments with David Sorin, the chair of the Entrepreneur Circle, or E-Circle as it's called, to give us a little bit of an explanation about how the E-Circle works within the GPSEG community.
David, you're the organizer, coordinator, chairman, whatever, of the Entrepreneur Circle in GPSEG. Tell us exactly what the E-Circle is and why it benefits entrepreneurs within GPSEG.
E-Circle is a subgroup of GPSEG, and it's somewhat of an anomaly in that GPSEG is senior executives and not necessarily entrepreneurial ones, but within our very large group, there are a number of people that have exhibited entrepreneurial traits and have used those traits to start businesses. And E-Circle is for actual entrepreneurs. We're not for the advisors to entrepreneurs. We're not for the people that invest in entrepreneurs. We actually are for entrepreneurs. People that have put sweat equity into a business, have bootstrapped businesses, have had to finance their business out of their own checkbook on occasions. And as a group, we get together on a monthly basis and talk about issues within our companies, use our shared experience to benefit individual members, and talk about issues that impact all of us in the entrepreneurial community. We make up a very small minority of GPSEG, yet I think we represent a powerful voice, and we are at this point trying to tap into the larger entrepreneurial community in Philadelphia, of which there are many constituent parts, and hopefully that will increase our relevance in the community and also benefit our E-Circle members.
If someone is a member of GPSEG or thinking about joining GPSEG and they're interested in the Entrepreneur Circle, what do they need to think about?
They need to look at the website and see our basic criteria, which are that you started a business, and we're really not talking about a solopreneur that's hung out a shingle because they're in transition, but somebody that actually has a real business that is post-revenue, that has the issues that an entrepreneur has. And if you fit that those criteria, then you can contact me. My email address is on the E-Circle page on the website, and we'll set up a meeting and we'll talk, and then you get to come to a meeting, give a presentation to the group, and hopefully then you're in.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The speaker in today's podcast, Dean Miller, is the president and CEO of the Greater Philadelphia Alliance for Capital and Technologies. The PACT, as it's called, is a premier resource for emerging growth companies in the information technology, clean technology, and life sciences industries. PACT connects emerging growth companies with venture investors, professional advisors, and technology-focused corporations so they can network, develop relationships, pursue business opportunities together, and market and promote their businesses to foster growth and innovation. In his work life, Dean is also the managing director of Novitas Capital, where he focuses on life sciences investments.
Thanks for having me, and thanks, Dave, for inviting me to talk. I do want this to be interactive, so at any point in time, just blurt out questions. And maybe a couple of agenda items. Like David, we kind of share a vision for pulling this entrepreneurial community together in Philadelphia. And before I start off and kind of give you a little bit of background, maybe get a little bit of sense of the room. How many folks are involved in technology-related things? It could be a company, it could be consulting, could be... Okay. And so that's really the core of PACT. You know, we're connected. We're a hub, if you will, for entrepreneurs, for investors, for corporations that are interested in technology, for other professional service organizations. All focused on the tech, life sciences, and clean tech community. But before I get into that depth, let me give you a little bit of background. I'm not a Philadelphia native. I'm a transplant. I came here after undergrad. I spent 7 years with a large company, a large Fortune 500 company, a variety of different management positions, and then realized I was much more entrepreneurial than that 12,000-person bureaucratic big company presented. And I decided to do a complete career switch. So I went back to business school. I went back to the Wharton School and got an MBA in their full-time program. And there, I got exposed to the world of entrepreneurship. And probably my first introduction to Philly entrepreneurship was through the Tech Transfer Center at Penn, back when Lou Burnerman was running it. And a whole bunch of upperclassmen said, if you want to get into something early, you got to go over to the Tech Transfer Center. So I went over there, and I found a company. It was called Adaptive Learning Systems. It was just getting started, still exists today, if you know Dean Becker and what he does. And it was two PhDs and Dean Becker, the CEO. And they said, you want to come in, help us build a business plan, financial model? I said, yeah, absolutely. So I jumped onto that and absolutely loved it. It was the thing I was looking for. Actually, through school, worked with them to help develop their business. And through that, got really exposed to the venture capital industry. I didn't even know what venture capital was before I went to business school. And all of a sudden, you start hearing about Safeguard and Internet Capital Group and all these firms. And I made it my life's mission to get a job at Safeguard and convince them to hire me on as an intern, a low-paid intern. And it was back in 1997, 1998, when things were really starting to take off. And I was fortunate enough to be at Safeguard when what was then called PA Early Stage just got started. So PA Early Stage, like TL Ventures, like Safeguard International, like ICG, were all firms that were spawned out of Safeguard, as probably many of you know. And PA Early Stage back in that point was really developed by the then Governor Ridge, along with Pete Musser, to fill this early stage void that existed as a lot of these firms kind of moved up to later and later stage investments. And it really accomplished that mission. So starting back in late 97 to today, we've invested in well over 60 companies through three funds, and I've invested about over $200 million into those companies. I've had a number of good successes. Rick, right here, one of our investments.
Back in
2000. I am still with Novitas. Now, here's the next question for you. How many of you have multiple jobs as entrepreneurs? More than one thing that you do? See, that's a theme, right? And I earned that. And so I have four jobs, effectively, right now. So I don't know if anybody can top four jobs. And I'm not talking about just consulting jobs, but so Novitas, which I've been with since 1998, continue to focus there specifically on investments in the life sciences sector and still sit on several boards of companies that I'm helping to manage and happy to go in offline if you're interested in hearing any of those. Back about 2 years ago, or I say a little longer than 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I was the chairman of the Mac Alliance. So many of you might remember the Mac Alliance as the venture group. It used to be called the GPVG, used to be called Delaware Valley Venture Investors, had a number of different
names, but it was then called MAC Alliance. And as the chairman, we were obviously in a very bad period of time from an economy standpoint back in 2008. And we were focused, continuing to put on this great conference that we did each fall, the Venture Conference that I'm sure many of you have attended, and doing a number of other things to bring the investor group together, which was, you know, still hunkered down, not necessarily focused on new investments, but managing their existing portfolio. And it was right around then that we had a common board member with the Eastern Technology Council. This is really the first point when we're talking about collaboration, working with other organizations. My predecessors, probably on both sides, Eastern Technology Council in the past, might say, forget it, we're just going to go and do it alone. And how many times have you heard that, right, from an entrepreneurial organization? We got our own idea, we're going to go off and do our own thing. And so I took a little different tact and said, you know, let's look at this. Let's take a little closer look. Long story short, we ended up merging the two organizations, the Eastern Technology Council and the MAC Alliance, into one. Because as we looked at it, we had almost identical missions, not very much overlap in terms of our supporters, in terms of our constituents. So the Eastern Technology Council, very tech company focused, much more suburban. The MAC Alliance, more investor focused and more urban, if you will. In terms of its events and its constituents. So we put them together, not really knowing how this was going to play out. Well, in the process, of course, the combined advisory board that we put together to do this turned to me and said, how about you do this? So there was job number two. And I said, okay, I'll do it on a part-time basis, because at that point we weren't raising a new fund, we weren't making new investments. And I had some time. I said, I'll provide the leadership and the vision on a part-time basis. And this was in April of 2010, which I continue to do. So we put those two together effectively April 1st, 2010, and we're off to the races. Really, again, to develop this refined vision for what is a hub? What is a hub for entrepreneurs, a virtual hub, if you will? We didn't have a physical location. You know, we had a full-time team focused on really putting on great content, great programs for entrepreneurs, for investors, again, for technology-focused corporations and professional advisors. And we wanted to draw from this greater Philadelphia region. So PACT, as it exists today, is that hub. And as we looked at our combined activities, we decided that some of them didn't work. Some were actually pretty good. And so we revamped it. We have, again, five full-time staff. We're an affiliate of the Greater Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce. And what that means is we're an independent organization, have an independent board. But the Chamber of Commerce, where we have our offices, does all of our back-end services and support. So everything from IT to HR to finance is handled by the back office of the chamber, which is absolutely fabulous if you have to run an organization, right? What better way than to outsource those kinds of things so that you can focus on your core mission, which is, again, putting on this great content to attract all those parties that really matter to us. So we start off and said, okay, we got a couple big events that we really think matter in this community. We've got the Enterprise Awards, which really celebrates the best and brightest in the technology community. We've got the Venture Conference, which allows from early entrepreneurs to more established entrepreneurs to come to present to a big group of people. And then we had a host of smaller events, some a technology conference that attracted a couple hundred people, but a smaller event. A number of events like this, roundtables. We had a CEO roundtable that attracted maybe 15 people, again, talking about a specific topic or a specific issue on a specific industry. On that industry front, we realized we needed to provide stuff for specific industries, both life sciences, tech, clean tech, and we wanted to do that, again, in smaller style so that it was relevant to people. So what we've established is an organization, again, that's this hub that has these big events, these signature events, and there's four of them now, and then an organization that also serves its constituents in a very channeled way as well, with smaller events. It could be industry-focused, could be CEO-focused, could be investor-only-focused. We've got about 30-plus of those that we do in any given year. And we run our fiscal year is July 1st to June 30th. Really, our calendar year is the school year. You know, start kind of after Labor Day, and we end before summer vacation. So everything kind of gets condensed in. We still have the conference, the Impact Conference, that many of you knew as the MAC Venture Conference. And that is a big 1,000-person conference, day and a half. And we want to make it accessible, just like we make everything in our organization accessible to entrepreneurs. I was talking to Rick beforehand. We had started a program a couple years ago called the 200 for 200, which allows 200 entrepreneurs to come in for $200. $1,000 is the normal rack rate for the day-and-a-half conference, but we discount it significantly for entrepreneurs because, again, we want to be an organization that's accessible to entrepreneurs. We'll charge the professional advisors a lot of money. We'll charge the investors a fair amount of money. But we want the entrepreneurs to be able to access the organization, access that hub, that network. We have the Enterprise Awards, which is still the same big black tie celebration of our best and brightest. We moved it from the fall to May because there's just so much stuff crowded in the fall. Again, talking about collaborating with other organizations, one of the things that I did as part of the collection of our board, by the way, we had two boards. How many of you have huge boards? We had two boards, each with about 35 people. And I said, there is no way I'm going to have a board of 70 people. So we pared it down and actually started off with a board of 21. But in that 21 included people like Steve Tang from the Science Center and Roseanne Rosenthal from Ben Franklin and recently joined Bob Mao from Philly Startup Leaders, because to me it was really important that that collaboration that started with putting together the ETC and MAC to form PACT continued beyond that. Not necessarily in subsuming these other organizations, but in working with them and collaborating with them. And so that collaboration has continued in a lot of the programs that we've done. GPSEG and our conversations with GPSEG are relatively new, but there are many organizations in this area that we've done combined programs with, including PA Bio, Philly Startup Leaders, Mobile Monday, the Science Center, Technically Philly. The list goes on and on. New Jersey Technology Council. So we don't view people, other organizations, as our competitors, as people we need to wipe out. We view them as people we want to work with to help to develop this community. And we do so in a manner that tries to benefit both constituents. So for example, right now with Philly Startup Leaders, and I'd be interested in your input on this one, Bob obviously just took over as the president of that organization. He's been a longtime friend and involved with PACT, and just came on our board. We're talking about how we develop a robust mentorship program. To get at this issue, for those of you who are on the listserv, about how do you bridge kind of that 20-something Philadelphia-based entrepreneur that doesn't have a car, is not driving to the DoubleTree Plymouth meeting, with the entrepreneur who is most likely, west of Bala Cynwyd, and in the suburbs, have successful company out in the suburbs. So we're talking about things like that. How do you do that? And that's something actually that I'd be really interested in engaging many of you in a dialogue on, because you all fit the profile, again, as those successful entrepreneurs.
The mentor program that has talked to Philly Startup Leaders.
I am actually familiar with that. That came up in the conversation with Bob. So, again, not to compete, we're trying to view this as how do we augment? How do we make this more accessible, to the community? I talked about there's four signature events. We took a sleepy little technology conference and really doubled down our involvement. And actually, it was Bob Mao who helped with this vision and created what is called the Forum Conference. It's actually going to be March 28th. You might want to check it out on our website. The Forum Conference is a next-generation technology conference whose theme may change every year, will change typically. This year, it's cloud computing. And it's a one-day conference. It's going to be at World Cafe Live. And this is a conference last year, or I should say 18 months ago, that maybe had 200, 225 people come to it. It won't be that much bigger, maybe about 450 or so. But the level of content is just incredible. We really went out and got a lot of support from larger technology organizations in the region as well as smaller entities, and brought in a couple just terrific speakers, including Nick Carr, one of the lead guys from Salesforce, and a host of others that really I think will be an opportunity for entrepreneurs, for corporations to figure out, okay, what is this cloud thing about? Even at a basic level, what's this cloud thing about? How do I leverage it for my organization? And how do I really kind of stretch my thinking of how I can leverage it for my organization if I'm already doing it? The other thing that we do at PACT, which is, again, our fourth ties to our fourth signature event, is giving back. We hear this a lot from our constituents. We love the opportunity to connect with people. We love the opportunity. We know that Facebook and LinkedIn, these are great things, but getting face-to-face just like you all do here at breakfast is still important. So the events are important to us, but we want to give back. Yeah, we love the idea of the mentorship program, but something a little deeper. And we have a foundation. We have a 501c3 as part of PACT that historically has been focused on STEM-based education. And we've continued that theme. So we have a foundation lunch every June, it's actually June 6th, that raises money for that 501c3 to focus on STEM-based education in Philadelphia. We're not talking magnet schools or private schools. These are Philadelphia run-of-the-mill high schools. And what we've done to date, and will continue to expand, is to fund internships for, again, run-of-the-mill Philadelphia high school juniors interested in STEM-based education to intern at Philadelphia tech companies in a paid internship for the summer. Oh, sorry, science, technology, engineering, math. Kind of covers the gamut of what, you know, education views is how do you train the future engineers, the future technologists, the future programmers. So it's a wonderful program. It's actually run by a separate entity that administers it, and we fund several students each summer to do that.
Are you working with Temple's lead there?
Yeah, actually, well, Temple's not the administrator, but Temple is another one of our collaborators, actually. We're very friendly with Janie Lucas, and we actually have a program where annually we do one of the Mid-Atlantic Diamond Venture showcases together.
I'm working on running a conference next June with Temple on STEM collaboration.
You know what? Thank you for bringing that up, because actually I just got connected with that person who is doing that. No, it's a female.
Okay.
And I'm forgetting her name.
I'll talk about later on.
Yeah. I'd love to. Because the person who's at Temple is actually has a much broader vision and involvement in the community in terms of STEM-based education than just Temple.
Yeah.
That's really helpful.
Familiar with Philadelphia Schools Partnership?
I'm not. Philadelphia Schools Partnership? I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, what they're doing, they came out a couple of years ago with this grand vision,
$100 million to funnel into places in schools in Philadelphia where there was a seat of excellence and where they could expand it out. And I think everybody thought that Michael was nuts talking about raising $100 million, but he's come pretty close, I think. I think I just had lunch with one of the people on the board on that organization the other day, and I think he said they're up to close to $70 million they've raised, and they're giving it out in grants of $400,000, $500,000, even $1 million to secular schools, religious schools, charter schools. And they're doing some really cool things, and Michael has become a powerhouse, not just in the entrepreneurial community, because he's quite an entrepreneur, but in the educational community as well. No, just for quality education, anywhere, in anything.
PAC, so we have, again, we have this event-focused organization. You know, it has signature events, has some smaller events. We have, you know, different programs, such as this developing mentorship program. We have the give back piece, you know, the foundation. And the last leg of it, of what we do, is really lobbying Harrisburg. So we're probably the largest organization from a tech perspective in this region that spends real dollars. We actually employ a lobbyist on the ground in Harrisburg to be the voice for our constituents in Harrisburg. Pennsylvania, as many of you know, through Ben Franklin, through a host of different organizations, the Greenhouses, have really supported and been ahead of the curve nationwide in supporting entrepreneurial ventures. Their pension funds were some of the first pension funds to put money into venture capital. And that had continued up until about 2008. Don't exactly remember what happened, but so about 2008, that money just dried up. We, even prior to 2008, had that voice in Harrisburg, and fortunately we did, because we've continued to develop that consistent voice so that the legislature understands how important entrepreneurship is, period, but technology-based entrepreneurship is to this region, to this broader region, to the whole Commonwealth. You know, the average salary of a technology job is well north of 2x, kind of the average salary of a job. So the creation, you know, of wealth through investing in entrepreneurship and the developing of these technology-based entrepreneurs is really important. So we are that voice, and it's an important aspect of what we do. It's not a big aspect financially, but it's an important aspect of what we do to maintain that consistent voice, both with the governor and the legislatures, and that's been helpful. It's not been helpful in terms of getting dollars over the past couple of years, but nobody, unfortunately, is getting dollars. But you have to be at this at the table, for those of you who have lobbied before, and continually ask and be told no before you get that yes. And you get that yes by asking, you know, on a consistent basis. So really, that is PACT. Those are the legs of PACT and who we are and what we are. You know, the profile of our membership, again, is all of those constituents. It is the entrepreneur. It's the investor. It's the corporation that's focused on the technology landscape. It is those other service organizations such as the Science Center, such as Ben Franklin. And it's the professional advisor group, which are the lawyers, the accountants, the investment bankers, the bankers, and everybody else that kind of, you know, wraps themselves around this community. And it's our view that, again, this community should work together and collaborate to help grow it. And that's why we really have, and I've made it my particular mission, to reach out to all these organizations, to host events, to host common events, to work together on different initiatives so that we're not all off doing, you know, individual things that are at odds or at a minimum just create calendar craziness. You know, I look at GP Seg's calendar alone and I get, oh my gosh, I can't believe how many things you have. And it's my mission to, again, work with all these organizations so that we can really have a refined approach to building building what we're doing here. One last point on that. The city of Philadelphia has not been incredibly progressive in their thought process, dating back to John Street. And with Mayor Nutter, he finally has lifted his head up on the importance of this community. And we're in very good dialogue and in a working dialogue on how we can work with the city to, in particular, increase venture capital in this region. And there's a lot of great ideas that I won't go into right now that are brewing and potential funding sources that are brewing that I'm pretty excited about. And it takes a lot because I'm a skeptic. I'm a venture capitalist at heart. I'm a skeptic. And when it comes to political stuff, I'm a skeptic. But I'm actually relatively optimistic about how we might be able to work with the city to unlock some things that may stir the pot a little bit, and particularly focused on increasing venture capital in the region. So with that, two things. Rick, who reminded me here that his organization has actually helped develop an app that you all can access. And as I look around this room, there's probably, you know, 90% penetration with iPhones, Androids, or iPads. We actually, just before the holidays, developed an app through Rick's organization that makes it easy to find out what's going on with Impact. So you can go to your Android store or your iPhone store and just search on Philadelphia PACT, and you'll get a free app there. Rick might charge you separately.
It's Mel.
Yeah, right, exactly. But you can download the free app, and literally what it is Rick's going to make it much more than what it is today. But what it is today is it's an opportunity to see in one touch what's going on with Impact. It'll give you our calendar of events. You can kind of click on it and see what's relevant to you. But into the future, what it's going to allow is when you go to an event to make it much more interactive, where you can check in, see who else has checked in, and really help you to work the room, if you will, right? You all come to this because you have common interested, you have common interests, right? And one of the things that we try to do is make it so that you can find those relevant people even in the 1,000-person Impact conference. And doing so in advance, doing so on-site is really a critical aspect to that. And obviously, technology is a big aspect of how that can happen. So we're investing some time and dollars in how we can do that better. So the app was one piece. The last piece is membership. Just like we make the Impact conference accessible to the entrepreneur, we really try to make membership in PACT accessible to the entrepreneur. It's $250. It allows you access, you know, to our database of members, to our, you know, all that we have to offer as an organization, and really encourage you to, you know, consider signing up. I know some of you are dual members between GPSEG and PACT, and we thank you for that. But we really do want to continue to grow this mission of growing our entrepreneurial community within these technology sectors, and we certainly need a lot of help to do it, from the big company on down to the single shingle entrepreneur. And you know, we recognize that all along that whole continuum, everyone is important to that.
What does a typical entrepreneurial member look like your organization?
There's not a typical view. I would say that what it is not, for the most part, is the PSL entrepreneur. And one of the reasons why I've, even before Bob's arrival, why I've collaborated with PSL. Because they, you know, as you shared before, you know, they don't necessarily think they need help, right? It's, I want to do it my own, I want to do it myself, I know what I'm doing.
I want to help each other. Yeah, I sat there on the last leadership meeting with them and Bob, and they do think that they know what's going on, that we're a little out of touch.
You know, and that's okay. I'm not about to try to change that. But what they also need is they need mentorship. And you know, Bob's realized that they need three things really. They need capital, they need access to talent, and they need mentorship. And maybe that mentorship is the last one for them to realize that they actually need, at least in some of the cases. But we've really tried to reach out to them, and we're holding an event at the end of February in combination with Philly Startup Leaders down at the Science Center. We did a real successful one in the early summer, late spring, but just really trying to pull that group out. They also, you know, again, they're not going to come out to the Plymouth meeting. So we move our stuff around. We move our stuff in the suburbs, in the city. But generally, that is not typically the member. They'll come to the conference. They'll come to different things. But they're not generally a member. I would say that it's more of, you know, the prototypical kind of 30 to, you know, on up something entrepreneur that everything from, you know, a couple $100 million, you know, startup to the really early stage pre-revenue startup. There is not a typical look, and we cover multiple industries. So it's tech, which is pretty broad, right, in terms of industries. We cover life sciences and clean tech. So we've got a smattering across all of those.
I wonder, has anyone ever assessed the difference in perception of the concept of mentorship between the mentors and the mentees? Let me tell you where I'm
no, please
going
go.
With this. I think it's very easy for us with the gray hair to think of ourselves as mentors, mm-hmm. as adding value. But if I rewind myself 30 years ago, if someone had said to me, you need a mentor, I'd be one of those guys who probably put them to bird. On the other hand, if what someone said to me is, I know someone just like you, but with 30 years more scar tissue, and you could collaborate together, I might experience that offer very differently. And I'm just wondering if anyone has done any, essentially, market research into the use of it.
I don't know. I'm not sure, but I know that, you know, we're thinking about that issue as we think about how to successfully pair up people more. And I've had a lot of conversations about this recently. I don't think you can force mentorship, first of all. There'll be those that get it right out of the gate and say, I really need somebody. And I think those will be the good first examples to the people who don't think they need someone, right, that who will form that bond with someone that really makes a difference in who they are as a leader, who they are as an executive, what impact they have on the company, and will lead to those other folks who say, I don't need anybody, and it'll change them over time. We're not going to change it overnight. There are, I think, in my estimation, a sufficient number of entrepreneurs, even in that 20-something category, that know they need someone. They're just not sure on how to get them. And, you know, I don't view this much different than, you know, dating or finding your spouse. You're not going to find them out of the gate. And one of the things we're talking about is how to facilitate finding the right mentor. Because I think it to have success, you need to date a little bit. And we're trying to figure out how do you efficiently date mentors and mentees. Because just like not all mentees are going to want mentorship, you're not going to want to mentor all these mentees. So, you know, maybe there's a speed dating format, you know, something along those lines that can be held on a regular basis that allows people one success point. Find one or two second meetings that you really want to have, right? It's not about finding a mentor at that moment, but find one or two follow-up meetings that ultimately may lead. So it's, you know, that's kind of it's at least my initial view on how maybe to do it. But I'm not familiar with any research on the issues.
It just strikes me, having played both roles back and forth very recently, that there, and I have not thought of this before very recently, there is an inherent power dynamic between a mentor and a mentee, that people who are young, confident enough to start their own businesses, actually would turn away from. And that's subordinate, superior. And if the language were changed, or if something in the messaging were changed just a bit,
yeah,
it might open the gates much more broadly.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I actually talked to a mentor just yesterday who said, unsolicited, that they got as much or more out of the experience than, you know, than the mentee.
Absolutely.
And I think actually if that concept that this is a two-way mentorship is brought to the table, then I think perhaps both parties will more easily, you know, connect. Because I agree with you, that whole, you know, I don't need another father figure, right? I already have one, is a failed attempt at mentorship for a lot of particularly young entrepreneurs that think, I know what I'm doing.
So, Dean, that's exactly the point that I was going to make, that it is a two-way proposition. And when, first of all, when you help someone, you do learn a lot. But beyond that, if we were, and we try to do this in GPSA, I'm not sure the message gets communicated well enough, but there are lots of things that senior-level experienced people need help with to be current on current day technologies, and lots of things that these younger entrepreneurs could help us with. So if the value proposition is promoted to be two-way, where you help me, but I help you too, to understand some of these things that we're not experienced with,
mm-hmm,
that's helpful.
Yeah.
To understand that you are actually going to mentor in the other direction.
Yeah. I think that's partly is the approach with how the mentor approaches, you know, the relationship as well.
In fact, and GPSEG.
The trifecta.
Yeah.
You need at least one more.
Yeah. And, you know, we tried to, me and Jane and Paul, we tried to collaborate between PSL and mentorship, the mentor subcommittee, subgroup. It failed back in the day for certain issue, for certain reasons. But what I found is, recently two people in PSL have started asking me for advice in their businesses. So the reason that one is that maybe 22 years, another one is more older. And what I found is being in the community, actively participating in the discussions. You know, if I were to go there and say, hey, I'm a technology guy with 20 years of experience, I'm going to mentor you, that's what kind of we did in the back in the day, it is going to fail. So being among one of them, that's what they told us back in the day too. Being among one of them, participating in the issues, the mentorship will automatically will happen. So active participation from GPSEG other member groups is the one that we need.
Yeah, I, you know, part of that is just being aware of what that community is like. And that's one of the reasons why I joined and got on the listserv, was to better understand the psyche of that entrepreneur. Because it is different. And, you know, I had this conversation with my team yesterday, who part of whom really was focused more in another life in developing a mentorship program in the suburbs. And I said, we cannot ignore that this group in the city is very different. It doesn't mean that we're not going to mentor suburban entrepreneurs. That's still part of it. But reaching this very early tech-focused entrepreneur is a challenge because there's a very different mentality.
I don't mean to monopolize the conversation, but I'll share a story. Yesterday, I had lunch, Classic Diner, for those of you who know it.
Love the Classic Diner.
Yeah, well, that's personally cool's Cafeteria West. And as opposed to Manila's being a little further east. And we had several people there. We had the two founders of the company. We had employee number three. We had a 20-something individual who is all about social media impact, marketing campaigns and all the rest. So maybe he was 25. Employee number three of ours is 28. And there was one other person there in his late 60s, a former Harvard and Wharton marketing professor who refers to himself as an analog guy. And the idea was to see if we could form some kind of win where these two guys would be so attracted to the skill set of the other that they'd give us what we wanted really cheap. And I think it's going to work out great. And for those young guys who don't have cars and can't afford the cab fare, it seems to me that if you took a few dollars out of the lobbyist's annual budget and arranged for car service to bring them out here once a quarter and let them present to us, that might really turn things on its head.
Hmm. There's been some talk about doing that, going to other cities, but I like your idea about going to the suburbs.
Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with our technology, but it's a way of measuring how people team together. So what you interpreted as them being attracted to each other's skill sets might also have been a fundamental attraction between two different ways of teaming. Those are measurable. And what I was thinking when you said, how do you find the right mentor? One of the things that you could do, and we'd be happy to support that, in other words, make a contribution of our technology, would be for people to take a role-based assessment, and then you can actually predict, for instance, things like what kind of an entrepreneur is this entrepreneur likely to be most successful in. There are four different styles. I'm not going to go into the details. Also, there are role pairs, and you know, if you get a natural role pair together, you have a kind of a natural feeling of connectedness. Two different styles of working as a team, but both of them are extremely complementary. So we could talk about that later if you're interested.
Yeah. Thank you.
Having worked with the PSL people a bit, I mean, actually a lot of them, my clients, are the guys that have ideas, and we do. You're going to have to show them, I agree with what you were saying, to say, well, you need a mentor, that's not going to work. You have to show them what they're going to get out of it. I mean, they're going to look at really what the benefit is, you know, to get to their next step. And that's the magic you got to figure out to communicate with them of how they're going to really benefit.
You know, one of the things that is probably somewhat controversial within our professional advisor group, or will be when it's shared, you know, these entrepreneurs don't want professional advisors as their mentors. They want experienced entrepreneurs. And there's no shortage of lawyers and accountants that want to advise these companies for free. And they do a great job of providing them good advice, but it's not on the kind of advice that these entrepreneurs want. So that's one of the things that I think it's critical to have a broader mass, and why I was so glad that, you know, David asked me to come here and talk, because it's groups like this that we all need to work together with, you know, to augment those experienced entrepreneurs. Because I think that there's, right now, just in the natural flow of things, there's more lawyers and accountants hanging around places where those entrepreneurs are than there are experienced entrepreneurs, which is not a bad thing. It's just not what those entrepreneurs really want. You know, they really want the experienced executive that's been there, that's got some scars, that can share with them, you know, how to operate maybe a little differently than what they are, or give them a little bit of insight to some pitfalls that they've experienced along the way that is unique to the experience that you would all bring.
Yeah, being a mentor is like being a consultant, of course. And a successful consultant, there's a certain style, a certain personality that works well with people, with clients, as opposed to some of these young people. If you go in there and tell them they're doing everything wrong and try to be very father-like in many cases, they're going to just throw you out. It doesn't matter how good you are or how experienced you are. You'll never have the opportunity to share that knowledge with them. I started many years ago a consulting company in grad school, and I would go out and see the clients and ask them how they're doing with the kids. You know, and I was one of the kids. And somebody said, "Oh, this guy Bill is a disaster case. I won't even work with him. Get me somebody else." And when you ask, it was the guy that was a great finance guy. He's telling him how stupid he was and how badly he was running his business. And, you know, that isn't how you start. So, I mean, just as a mentor, I think we can fail quite readily by our style and our approach to mentoring. That's first of all. And then also, just about the kids in Philadelphia. I worked with a young man out of Penn about 3 years ago, and he was exactly that kind of guy. Bright, had some great ideas. and couldn't get around. So it wasn't uncommon for me to go downtown. I live in Ballyquinwa, so it's kind of easy. But to take him places and to meetings. And we worked, although I didn't understand half of what he was doing, frankly. But I come out of the old archaic chemicals and plastics business, you know, which doesn't exist anymore. But you're teaching people values. You're teaching entrepreneurs values, approaches, networking, and so on. And that worked. I couldn't help them very much in this technology idea with a whole staff of people doing that. But I think there's a lot we can all contribute, and certainly if we've all been in startups or run our own businesses, then there's a lot to contribute.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, think of yourself, you know, over the course of your career. Yeah, it's not just one mentor that had helped you along the way. You got different things from different people. And I think particularly for the young entrepreneur, again, this is not to totally skew the conversation away from other entrepreneurs, suburban or, you know, even first-time older entrepreneurs that still want some mentorship, but that young entrepreneur doesn't know to where to look for that first mentor, you know, and I think helping them to figure that out can only benefit the community in terms of growing more successful companies. I forget who I was talking to before, but, you know, there are a lot of bright-eyed entrepreneurs out there, men and women who have these terrific ideas that, you know, don't have a dime of revenue, you know, 18 months in, you know, 2 years in, and gone are the days where you're going to be able to grow a successful company that has that, with a couple of exceptions, but that has that profile.
Are you familiar with Auditorium in Langhorne?
I have heard the name.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mike Krupa.
Yep.
I was thinking about this,
speed dating. Their program is that I think they're going to have 16 to 18 entrepreneurs in there working on building companies. And they give them space, and they have sort of a network of partners who will be coming in from time to time to have an sort of office there. So anybody who's in the startup incubator can go and talk with whoever happens to be there. And I'm thinking that's kind of like that, because there is a certain, I don't know, serendipity about meeting somebody mm-hmm. that you sort of click with. And sometimes it doesn't make any difference if you're at opposite ends of the age spectrum or the experience spectrum or whatever. There's just sort of a click that happens.
Yeah.
And this gives all of those entrepreneurs opportunities to meet with experienced people from all different walks of life. Some of them are professional advisors, but it's not a bad model, you know. Instead of having like one mentor in residence, they have a whole cycle of them.
Yeah. And there are a number of, I mean, Quorum at the Science Center. There's a meeting a little later with a new group that's forming, again, a physical space that could be something like that in the city, you know, where you have a space where, you know, it's a magnet for both young entrepreneurs and experienced entrepreneurs to more casually connect. I think that, you know, sustainable mentorship program, I mean, my view, is not one that is heavily managed. It's one where it's facilitated and it happens freely. You know, it's the free market view of mentorship. But you need to provide those opportunities for that connection to happen. And it can't just be a single connection. It's got to be, you know, multiple opportunities. Yes. Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Yeah, but I think this dating analogy that we keep coming back to is, and as I listen to the description, I mean, you know, what Novatorium is it's a bar. I mean, in the analogy. And so what I wanted to ask was the offer that Mark made about is in fact you are the eHarmony of teaming, of mentoring. And I think what we're really looking at is the analogy of there isn't one solution. There are a whole range of things that we can do, like, you know, casual physical space, the bar, eHarmony, speed dating. You know, in essence, it's putting all this stuff together in a package and seeing what happens.
Yeah, the only difference is when it comes to mentorship, I'm a firm believer in polygamy.
Right. Well, there might be some people in the dating scene that have the same
thought.
There are.
Unfortunately, I'm this combination of entrepreneurial ADD and over 60 memory loss here, so I don't even know if I remember all the things that I wanted to ask you about. But, you know, I'm thinking back to, and I wasn't really entrepreneurial in my 20s. I didn't start companies till my 30s. But I realized that looking back, the biggest problem that I had was focus and staying focused and not having somebody say to me, is that thing you're about to do going to get you closer to or further away from where you want to go? And I think that some of us that are starting businesses, not just some of those young kids, have that ADD that gets us distracted away from that focus we need. And so some of this idea of mentorship is really just helping somebody keep their eye on the ball. And one of the things I've noticed this past year is that, talking about those law firms, for instance, and my good friend Mike Crossi and Fred Wilf and guys like that, they're doing office hours, open office hours, where entrepreneurs can come in and talk to them about their legal issues. Why don't we do entrepreneurial office hours?
Mm-hmm.
And, we can do them at the Quorum. I'm a member of the Alliance of Women Entrepreneurs, and we have access to the Quorum free.
Mm-hmm.
We could set up office hours there and publicize them, and anybody that wants to come and test out, stick their toe in the water and see if there's somebody there that can be of service to them.
I love that idea.
I think is well worth it. And it's not, the lawyers are trolling for clients.
Yeah.
That, obviously.
They're self-interested.
And that's
no
okay.
Doubt.
I mean, that's what lawyers do.
Mm-hmm.
Being one, I know. But, the point is here that, it might be a way to help. And it's not so much being an entrepreneur in residence, like they have a temple or something like that, but it's having a group of people that are just willing to be there.
Yeah.
And field questions. Let me run this by you. What does your experience tell you? When I work with these younger entrepreneurs, I'm like the lead balloon that keeps their feet on the ground. When they start wanting to fly up into the clouds and take their idea in 1,000 different directions and say, this is a $1 trillion company.
Yeah.
I got to say, well, first let's make it $1 million company. Let's figure out how to do that. Then we can scale it to $1 trillion. Right. The other thought that I have, and I don't know how realistic this is, but I've done it in other industries, is to create an entrepreneurial resources directory. When Philadelphia Film Office opened, we created a directory for film resources in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So that whether it was makeup artists, lighting companies,
yeah,
grips, power companies, etc., they published a directory,
mm-hmm,
that told you who all the resources were. We don't have anything in Philadelphia that will give you a one-stop shop to look at and say, wow, these are the sources that I can go to. And it's probably not a paper directory at this point in time. It's probably an electronic directory. But nonetheless, it might be something.
We've started to do that on our member section of our website. But I agree with you that that's, something valuable.
PSL has one a year or so ago, got a little bit of exposure.
It's actually scary when you start to put all the resources down. It is a little bit, you're just looking at a list, even with this brief descriptions of all the different resources. It's kind of hard to figure out if it's the first time and you have no context of any of the individual organizations, where to go for what. So it does need to have some context to it.
It's a starting point, and it can be funded through advertising, mm-hmm, letting the companies that want to be listed pay for a listing, and if they want to have ads, pay for ads. And,
yeah.
I don't know, just a thought.
Yeah.
David, a thought process with regard to that. Mel Biotta started the Base Camp calendar a year or two ago,
yeah,
and has already expanded that considerably. And so you might already have a significant jump start from the technology and the content standpoint. And Mel, if you know him, he's a real giving guy.
So we work with Mel, and we're actually one of the founders of that Basecamp calendar. So we're one of the founding supporters,
right,
and it's our calendar. We believe that, again, to that point of, let's make this a community, a collaborative community, and have multiple organizations utilizing this single point, for calendar. I know GPSEG uses it as well. So, we're big believers and work with Mel and Rick.
That to the app, the mobile app, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think Steve maybe touched upon a little bit to your point on the mentorship side. One of the things that I've heard on the mentorship side is the awareness that this isn't just a single meeting. You're not just sitting down with an entrepreneur and giving them a little bit of advice. We're talking about a much more involved process. You don't have to get married, but you know, it definitely is more than just a single opportunity to share your ideas, you know, with an entrepreneur. And there's some investment of time that goes along with that that I think also contributes to the lack of success with sustainable mentorship, where, you know, while the mentee might want more and more and more, the mentor is only willing to give so much.
It involves a lot of commitment. It does. I did some
when Chris Pavlidis was at Temple, obviously still alive, he had me do some work with some of the Temple grad business students, whether it was for some of the competitions or some other, or even without. Most of the kids I found are very receptive to that. But you can't just walk in one day and then walk out again and then come back a month later. I mean, it really, they have to get to know you, build a certain confidence. If you can find success on one particular activity and you build credibility, again, no different than being a consultant, you know, I mean, but for free, of course.
Right.
You kept you up there longer than I anticipated, David.
No, thank you. Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. If any of you want to learn more about PACT, you know, feel free to ping me. I'm easy to get a hold of through my multiple email sources. You can get me through Novitas, dmiller@novitascapital.com, or dmiller@philadelphiapact.com. But would be happy if you have ideas or if you have interest in getting more involved in PACT or the mentorship program or want to know more about membership or anything that we're doing, you know, feel free to ping me. Again, it's my goal to really help build a collaboration between all of our entrepreneurial resources and the organizations that are helping to grow this community. One last plug. I am an entrepreneur, and my next phase will ultimately be identifying and buying a company to run. So if any of you have leads on that front, you know, my profile of a company, I'm looking for a product company. I'm not looking to start something up. Contrary to everything that I've been doing for the past 15 years and investing in early stage companies, I'm not interested in doing a startup, but buying and running an established company with cash flow that could be in a variety of sectors. Principally, probably a product company. Could be manufacturing, could be outsourced manufacturing, could be value-added distribution. But as a plug, if you've got ideas or thoughts for me, you know, in this region, then let me know.
What price range?
I'm looking at sub $10 million. So I want to stay below the radar of private equity guys because I don't want to compete with them. And I don't want their money. I see what we do to CEOs. Look at the gray hair in Rick. I mean, he colored it this morning, but, you know, it's, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Just some big articles saying that people are coming. I mean, Wall Street Journal yesterday, we're drying up this year or something like that.
So, it's funny because that's one of the things David asked me to comment on. So I did a little research, you know, collecting different viewpoints. And it's interesting because there's both optimism and pessimism out there. I would say in general, outside of maybe the social media tech sector, you know, nationwide, there is pessimism from a venture perspective. I would say in this region, there's more optimism than what you see broader. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Philadelphia is, as an economy, never sees the high highs and never sees the low lows. And just on that front, we do a survey every year at our venture conference. It's actually a live survey at the lunch where respondents have an electronic device that they answer questions to. And 500, you know, again, our constituent, investors, entrepreneurs, larger corporations. And I was actually pretty surprised. Now, people like Mark Zandi and a number of economists believe that things will improve, you know, later in the year. We're going to go through some rough spots, but things will improve. But there's a couple things in here that really kind of struck me. For example, compared to this time last year, how would you describe your company or portfolio company revenue? Over 60% was increased, and almost 40% was increased more than 10%. That was a pretty surprising statistic to me. The other piece to this was, what do you expect the revenue change to be in the coming year? And over 60% said greater than 10%. So there's a lot of optimism among folks in this region in terms of economic improvements. But you're right, from a venture perspective, you know, it is dismal in a lot of sectors. Let's take life sciences, for example. If you're a life sciences entrepreneur, you got a big road ahead to fund your company. Not the least of which is, unlike these 20-something entrepreneurs that are building web apps, you actually need real capital. you need real capital to get your product through the FDA or whatever it might be. But there are implosions left and right in venture firms, like real brand name venture firms that either can't raise money, partners are leaving, whatever the case is, across the board. I had lunch just before with a bunch of colleagues on the venture side right before the holidays, and it was downright depressing. I said, guys, stop talking about this. We're getting together to celebrate the holidays. This was on December 23rd, and they're going to example after example of firms that are just imploding because it's so challenging on the life sciences side. Tech side, a little less so. But again, you have your pockets that have opportunities. Maybe you saw the same article I read where Mark Andreessen has stopped investing because
of a bubble out there.
Well, it's clearly a bubble, right? So you got the Silicon Valley, which is definitely its own ecosystem, its own economy, if you will. But I think there's opportunity for the tech sector outside of the Silicon Valley. That will be much brighter than, in particular, life sciences. Clean tech, I don't know. We have this conversation internally. Is clean tech truly an industry? Remember the nanotech, right? Everybody was like, okay, nanotech, it's an industry. It's a technology. So I don't know. There haven't been a sufficient number of good successes in that from an investment perspective. And I'm not sure if that will play in a role of whether or not you'll sustain future investments in clean technology. Certainly, Philadelphia has a lot in that sector. Everything from its proximity to Marcellus Shale and all the discussion that goes on with technologies around that, extraction, water purification, et cetera. Philadelphia happens to be an epicenter and hub for water, period. There's a lot of expertise and dialogue around the clean water issue here. And with what's going on down at the Navy Yard in terms of efficient buildings and the large grant that they got to help develop more efficient buildings. So there's a base of that going on here. Whether or not it can really become truly an industry, like, for example, in our conference this fall, we had a track for clean technology, but our discussion after the conference was maybe it should be a half a day, not a full day. So... Yeah, because the state put a lot of money to it. Yeah. So the state a couple years ago recognized, hey, this is an important area, and they plugged a lot of money into that sector and gave a bunch of money to Ben Franklin to create initiatives around that. Whether or not it's truly has the capability of becoming a sustainable industry sector that's worthy of continual venture investment, I don't know. Just because there haven't been the successes to date. So, but just a few thoughts on my view on the economy.
We've heard a lot about New York all of a sudden becoming maybe the second largest venture community after Silicon Valley.
I think they are.
I think they are. And everybody talks about Boston as a big venture center also. I mean, where do we really stand relative to those two communities? And what do we have to do to be more of a player to keep our folks here in town rather than going up to New York or even to Boston?
I think we need early money. I mean, that's my own personal view. Where do we stand? I mean, in general, we stand kind of always in the top 10, but in the middle of the pack, below, typically the Silicon Valley, New York, Boston, Texas, which, depending on how you do the math, it's faltered as of late, no doubt. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with the availability of early capital. I think the Angel Group, probably many of you, written checks into companies that have helped prop it up a little bit, but we still need larger dollar early stage capital that, for the most part, has left the region or has dried up. Some of it having to do, again, with this continual state support that just got the rug pulled out from underneath it back in 2008. Other of it because it's just we've had a challenging return environment. You look back in the venture industry, there have not been positive returns for 10 years on an overall basis. And you take out a couple of anomalies in terms of the the Googles of the world, and it's even worse than that. So what do we need to do? I think we need to look at ways to fund these early entrepreneurs so that they don't need to go up to New York or need to go up to Boston. And I think that's a realistic proposition. If I look back at our early portfolio, one of our biggest success stories was a semiconductor company up in the Lehigh Valley, AA Netcom. And they had two term sheets back in 1997, late 97. One was from us and one was from Greylock. Now, how the hell do you compete with Greylock? Greylock, the one difference in really the term sheets was Greylock wanted them to move to California. And the entrepreneur who was a Bell Labs refugee who's, you know, really kind of committed to Lehigh Valley said, I want to stay. And they went with our term sheet and ended up selling the company 3 years later to PMC Sierra for $900 million. He created 40 millionaires right in the Lehigh Valley, which has then spawned numerous other successful companies. And, you know, that's a good example of if you had the capital locally, I think some entrepreneurs will leave, right? I mean, does it make sense for some of the social media types to go up to New York or go up to out to Silicon Valley just to be in that kind of world? Yeah. But when you look at what we have from a corporate infrastructure perspective, you know, the enterprises are here. You know, they're not, you know, the enterprises are, you know, New York to D.C. This is where if you're selling to companies, the supermajority of the enterprises you want to sell to are in this region. I mean, you can say a lot from a life sciences perspective is certainly the answer, but from a technology or just a corporate perspective, it's here too. You look at the financial services world and, you know, it's made, we're still so proximate. I think one of the challenges of Philadelphia, again, not being a native, it's this Quaker Philadelphia, right? We don't think, you know, too highly of ourselves, and being in the shadow of New York City has made it challenging for this community to really develop an independent, strong view of itself as an entrepreneurial community when you're so proximate, you know, 90 minutes away from a New York City. But I don't think it's overcome. I think we can overcome that. Again, and I think one of the keys to it is early stage capital.
Thank you very much for sharing all of that.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this program from the Entrepreneurs Circle of the Greater Philadelphia Senior Executives Group. And for more information on the Greater Philadelphia Senior Executives Group, GPSEG, visit gpseg.org. We produce this program in the studios of Lubetkin Global Communications in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're on the web at lubetkin.net. If you'd like information on how to sponsor these programs, send me an email at steve@lubetkincommunications.com. Right now, for everyone at the Greater Philadelphia Senior Executives Group and its Entrepreneur Circle, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.